Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. This year marks the 36th Pride celebration in Columbus, an event started by three young men who organized a small march down High Street. The event has grown to a three-day celebration with more than 500,000 attendees and takes place this year on June 16th and 17th at the Bicentennial and Genoa Parks in downtown Columbus. We're going to talk about the culture of the festival and what's new this year coming up later in the program. Right now, we want to talk about another LGBTQ icon of Pride. It started in 1978 with the San Francisco Gay Men's Chorus. Sadly, its first public performance was an unplanned appearance at a candlelight vigil for the recently assassinated San Francisco City Councilmember Harvey Milk and Mayor George Moscone. But the performance sparked a movement that has endured for nearly 44 decades. Joining us by phone is Artistic Director of the San Francisco Gay Men's Chorus, Tim Selig. He is a conductor, singer, teacher, author, and motivational speaker. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. And I need to add one thing to my bio.
Okay.
Or I will be thrown out of my house. My husband is from The Ohio State University, graduate from Dayton, Ohio.
Okay.
Now, I've done my duty, and we're good here.
Happy home life for all.
Right. So good morning.
Good morning. There's something about the name of the chorus that resonates. That was a deal back in the day. There was a lot of conversation about identifying anything as gay, let alone a gay men's chorus. I know you weren't alive back then, Tim, but
you're that's funny. Yeah, thank you.
But you're either. Right. But what do you know about the name and the significance of identifying that way?
Well, I know more than we could discuss in 20 minutes because it's unbelievably fascinating how our history sort of took place. Stonewall is the famous turning point for all of us, but it obviously that was the tipping point, and there was more before that. A lot of it happened in San Francisco, but once Stonewall happened, you know, the Pride movement began, and they started having parades, and San Francisco was just really popping after the Summer of Love in 1968, and it was one of the hotbeds for free thought and free love. In 1978, a lot of things happened. One was Gilbert Baker invented the rainbow flag. You know, that it's hard to imagine that somebody could invent that, but he did. And at that Pride parade that summer, a man named John Sims gathered some instrumentalists together, kind of like the Ohio State University Band, or not. And they marched for the first time as the first gay band ever. And so after that Pride parade, he was like, well, you know what? If there are people that play instruments, surely they sing. Of course the gays sing, and we'll get them together. So in October, they put up flyers, and about 100 men showed up to the first rehearsal. And an argument ensued. I know that is shocking to you and your audience that you could get 100 gay men in a room and they would disagree. And it was about the name. And there were half the room was wanted the name to be Men About Town. And the other half, boy, that would have changed history, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
And the other half said, look, no one has ever done this before. It's a courageous step in a day when you can still get fired for being gay, but we should call ourselves the San Francisco Gay Men's Chorus. And they took a vote, and that won, and it really did change certainly the history of choral music and LGBT choral music.
Were there people back then that didn't join the chorus because of the name?
Absolutely. And there were times when the chorus gained notoriety, as you mentioned, within its first month of its life.
Yeah.
And there would be people that could not perform for years. And then I was the conductor of the Gay Men's Chorus in Dallas, the Turtle Creek Chorale. And throughout the LGBT choral movement, if there were news media or photos taken, people would step off of the risers or off of the stage and not be photographed or videotaped. Because they could absolutely lose their job. I'm not sure that's over.
Well, I wondered how many, I wonder if there, even in San Francisco, if there is a sense that some people join the chorus because it is their safe way to come out. It's their safe way to be public.
In 1983, we gathered together in a group and formed Gala Courses, Gay and Lesbian Association of Choruses. It is now worldwide. There are LGBT choruses on every continent except Antarctica. We always have to put that in there. And yes, one of the things that Gala Choruses stand for, one of those is that we provide a safe place for people to come and be who they are, do what they love to do, which is sing, find community, compassion, a home, a family. And the other thing that we say, regardless of whether the gay and lesbian moniker is in the name, is every time a Gala Chorus takes the stage, it makes a political statement just by being there. So we have, you know, music and activism and compassion. It's an amazing organization and an amazing thing what we do.
The choruses, as you mentioned, the first public performance was at that spontaneous gathering intended to mourn the loss of some really important people to the movement.
Right.
How did it move on to the sense of hope and joy that it's known for now? When did that happen? Because then after, you know, after the 70s came the tragic 80s and 90s of the AIDS crisis.
Let me just give you a little really sort of interesting perspective. In 1978, when this chorus started, it was just a party. I mean, we were there to sing and dance and party. And in 1981, the San Francisco Gay Men's Chorus took a very now infamous national tour. It went to 9 cities across the United States and started gay choruses. And on the day it left, the San Francisco Chronicle, which is our paper, did a full page article on Gay Men's Chorus goes on national tour. And in the corner is a little article, first victim of gay cancer dies. And it was a side note. And then, of course, we all know what happened after that. And the gay choral movement grew up. We all of a sudden, the party turned into grief recovery, into mourning losses, and also into using our music to uplift, to keep people alive, to sing at memorial services. So it was one of those things that it was horrific. I was there through the whole thing. Mm-hmm. And but we matured and we grew up and we learned how to take care of each other, not just sing disco hits. And when we came out, when we began to come out of that, you know, there were times when we thought we would not have a choir left because everyone was going to die. And then we began to, and I'm HIV positive as well, And I say that at every turn because people need to know that we're still here. Mm-hmm. We began to come out of that and we're like, oh my goodness, what are we going to do now? We're going to live and we have something to do. And we have something to say. And it really emboldened us as a movement to begin turning our sights to social justice, to issues of equality, as well as reaching out to other communities to support them, whether that be breast cancer or Planned Parenthood or those kinds of things. We've broadened our scope and it's really become an incredible movement.
I want to bring in now founding member of the Columbus Gay Men's Chorus, Doug Althauser. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, man. Longtime listener.
And also board president of the Columbus Gay Men's Chorus, Doug Motes. Welcome.
Thank you for having us.
The social conscious imperatives of the chorus is that's found in Columbus as well.
Yes, it was one of the things that we talked about when the five of us got together to start to figure out how were we going to do this and make it successful. We wanted to make it an inclusive organization, but we also wanted to make it a safe organization. One of the things we had to discuss ourselves was whether or not we would use the word gay in the title of our organization. And when it was coming time to do our first concert, we had to talk about whether or not we would ask or require people to use their last names in our program. The decision was made to leave the last names in there. I know some people decided not to, who had auditioned and gotten to be a part of the chorus, chose not to be in that first performance. We don't have that issue now, but it's still important to remember that there was a time when we had those kinds of restrictions. I'll even add to what your guest from San Francisco is talking about. At the last gala conference in Denver last year, we had our first contingency from China. 7 or 8 singers from China were there, and some of them had to wear masks when they were on stage singing because of the repercussions they might face when they got home.
It's still a thing, if not here, then around the world.
Yes, it's
the Beijing Queer Chorus, absolutely.
Yes.
And
it's
that's
still
what,
a thing
that's
here.
That's what their name is.
A bigger thing there, yes.
Columbus didn't form its Gay Men's Chorus until 1990. How do you know what made you, the small group of people that you were part of at the time, what told you that it was ripe for the time was right?
You know, in December of 1989, I was invited to several parties where several of us were there. A man named Jack Wisniewski played the piano a lot. A colleague of his, he was a psychologist, a colleague of his named Robert Germain sang a lot. I liked to sing a lot. Phil Martin, who was working with Ohio State University as the speech coach, was singing as well. And at some point in December, we all started thinking, gee, how come there's no men's chorus? Wouldn't it be nice to have a men's chorus? I think there's a men's chorus in San Francisco. I think there's one in New York. And in January, Jack gave me a call and said, I think we really should do this. Would you like to be a part of it? And the four of us that I've just mentioned said yes. Phil Martin found a man named Kevin Carey, who was an arts administrator for the state of Ohio, and who coincidentally had been the pianist for an earlier effort in the 1980s to form a men's chorus that didn't last. The five of us started getting together thinking, this is the time we want to do this. It was a very, Columbus was in a very transitional time between 1989 to, I'd say, 1992 or three.
Yeah.
It was a time when gay rights were really just being asserted and established through city council, through the laws, through the state of Ohio. But we wanted to form this not as a political movement, but as a social opportunity for people to get together. And I'll say again, not as a political movement, but as an opportunity to show the public there was more to being gay than HIV and having sex, which again, in the 1980s, was the first thing most people thought about when you heard about gay men in particular.
Phil Martin was my roommate actually for 5 years. And what Phil always likes to say is, when the Gay Men's Chorus would sing, he would say, how can people hate us when we're singing such beautiful music?
So, you know, I read that three major motivations for joining a gay and or lesbian chorus or gala group are community, politics, and artistic quality. Tim Selig, is that still the case, or is it still a three-legged stool over there?
It absolutely is. We ask all of our auditionees, as I'm sure the Columbus Chorus does as well, you know, why are you joining? Why now? And what is the reason that you're joining? And it's pretty evenly split across all of those three things.
The summer of 2018 was supposed to be devoted to a tour of Cuba and Mexico. Those plans are now on hold. What's the new agenda, Tim Selig?
Well, it was the day after the election when we will, obviously, since we were the first Gay Men's Chorus, we will be celebrating our 40th anniversary first. It's kind of going to be that way forever. And so we decided the day after the election that spending that much energy and time, although worthwhile and a wonderful mission, we needed to stay home and work on things here at home, spend our time and energy. And so we first chose the two states with the most discriminatory laws on the books, and those were Mississippi and North Carolina. So we've taken the pen, the lavender pen of Harvey Milk, and we're going to take the chorus to the South. And it's turned out that we're going in October, and we're going to Mississippi, Alabama, Tennessee, North Carolina, South Carolina, and Georgia. Six states in 8 days, and we're taking a big bunch of people. 300 people are going on the tour.
How has the booking been?
So it's been amazing. The people in the South are so incredibly excited, and we are doing a combination of sing, share, and shout. We're singing major concerts in the major venues every night. During the day, we're doing Q&A sessions. We have four trans members. We're doing sessions on HIV and AIDS in colleges and universities, as well as in churches and rec centers, wherever. So we'll divide. We have seven buses going. We divide. Mm-hmm. And then our shout is we're going to sing on the steps of the Mississippi State Capitol, the Alabama State Capitol, et cetera, et cetera. And we're going to get to march across the Edmund Pettus Bridge with the mayor of Selma. So, yeah, it's going to be momentous, And we're very excited about it.
That's Tim Seelig. He's Artistic Director of the San Francisco Gay Men's Chorus. Also with me, Doug Althauser, a founding member of the Columbus Gay Men's Chorus, and Doug Motes, Board President of the Columbus Gay Men's Chorus. We're going to take a quick break. Here's a cut from Seasons of Love, performed in 2009 by the Lollipop Guild. That's an ensemble group of the San Francisco Gay Men's Chorus. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Measure in love, seasons of love, seasons of love, 525,600.
Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. That was a cut from Somewhere Over the Rainbow, performed by the Columbus Gay Men's Chorus a year ago to honor the victims of the Pulse nightclub shooting in Orlando. Founded in 1990, the group has attracted a large and loyal following in Columbus and beyond. It is, in some ways, an outgrowth of a worldwide movement born in 1978 with the San Francisco Gay Men's Chorus. We're talking about the history and cultural impact of gay men's choruses over the last 40 years. Still with us is Tim Seelig, the Artistic Director of the San Francisco Gay Men's Chorus, founded in 1978, as the first such group to openly identify as gay. Tim Seelig, again, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
Also with us, founding member of Columbus Gay Men's Chorus, Doug Althauser. Thanks again, Doug, for joining us.
Thank you.
And Doug, too, board president of the Columbus Gay Men's Chorus, Doug Motes. Thanks again, Doug Motes.
Happy to be here.
Mourning, grief, and anger are part and parcel of the movement. When something like the Orlando mass killing occurs, do you sort of jump into a certain gear, Doug Motes?
We had to sing our concert a few days after that. And it was during, you know, I still remember hearing the news as I was driving and just crying. And we were doing Return to Oz, which was a huge social justice piece. It was an anti-bullying whole show using the music from all iterations of Oz, Wicked, The Wizard of Oz, The Wiz. And after the performance was over, they asked me to say something, and I had to, because many people wanted to know why do we still need a gay chorus? And I remember the remarks that I said was, we need a gay chorus to mourn our dead. We need a gay chorus to fight like hell for the rights that we still need. And we need a gay chorus to celebrate all of the little victories that we have going along. For that chorus concert, we actually had, it was a tribute to the victims of the Pulse massacre. And we had all of their faces on the screen, and we invited the audience to join us in singing that Somewhere Over the Rainbow. And the day that it occurred, we had a rehearsal, and we rehearsed in the basement of the Ohio Theater. And much like the San Francisco Gay Men's Chorus, we had a spontaneous vigil where all of us from the Columbus Gay Men's Chorus went to the steps of the State House and sang Somewhere Over the Rainbow for anyone to come in and hear.
You know, I will say, in the event when any community, when any one group of people that have some similar characteristic are going to get together for grief, they're going to either eat, sing, or become angry and do something violent. And our community chooses over and over again to sing. We eat, but we choose to sing in this regard. In Columbus, for example, we've got a concert coming up, not this coming weekend, but next weekend. And anybody who wants to come to see us at the Lincoln Theater Friday, Saturday, Sunday, it will be as much a celebration of our ability to sing and perform and let the community know who we are and what we're about, as much as just the concert is based upon the music of Michael Jackson and his family. But it's as much a celebration of our community as anything else.
Tim, you've said that the phenomenon of a gay men's chorus is not a gimmick. And point taken. Is there a brand, though?
There is a brand. Let me back up really quick.
Sure.
If you're listening to this broadcast, go see the Columbus Gay Men's Chorus. So each men's chorus, or I shouldn't say men's chorus, because we have obviously women's choruses and mixed choruses as well as youth choruses and now trans choruses. But any of the gala choruses, each of them has their own brand. And each of them in their own city finds a niche that is appropriate to that city. And Columbus Gay Men's Chorus is at the top of the heap for entertainment. Let me just say, all of the gala choruses in the world look to Columbus and go, girl, how did you do that?
Thank you, Tim.
That's what they say.
You're being very kind.
No, the Dougs on this call know that I love me some Columbus Gay Men's Chorus and have been there and been fortunate enough to do workshops and have fun. But seriously, it's like jazzercise meets choir. It's amazing. So go see them. I know you're doing Jackson 5 Plus, and it will be an event.
You guys
now,
are... Go ahead, Tim.
Question? Yeah. So what was your question?
It's not a gimmick, but there is a brand. No. Yeah.
The wonderful thing that we get to do, and I am involved, as the Dougs know and other people, I'm involved with the Straight as well, and I just did air quotes with my fingers. I get to do things, workshops and guest conducting, with the other side of the coin, and they all look over the fence at what the gala movement does, and they are so jealous of the fact that we're not just a choir, we are a movement, and we change lives, and we change the lives of those who listen to us, but we also change the lives of the people who sing in the chorus. And it is something, it's something quite incredible to behold. The gala choruses are filling halls when gay choir or when straight choirs and university community choirs are really struggling, as
right.
well as other arts. And there is something so magical about, especially for our straight audience members to come and let loose and just be whoever they are as well. It's an incredible experience. So go see Columbus next week.
You know, the Harmony Project in Columbus is filling halls as well. And again, that's an organization that has a really strong community purpose to it, and it does seem to make a difference. People want that purpose behind it, not
they
just
do.
The music.
The millennials, and we love to talk about them as if they're, you know, some group over there. And I there are a lot of millennials in San Francisco. they're really not interested in they're not basically interested in the arts, and the symphony, ballet, opera are struggling to get the millennial generation involved. They are involved in what we do because they believe they're much more drawn to a mission than they are to arts without a mission. And we're very, very fortunate to have that happening. I'm interviewed all the time by straight choruses, whether it's American Choral Directors or Chorus America, about how in the world, what is this thing that you all do that allows you to fill halls? And I love that question. So thanks for asking.
Well, I would say we do some of that as well. We just did a great concert called Heroes, where we actually combined with students from the ACPA Performing Arts Academy in Columbus, the Columbus Gay Men's Chorus last year, as part of a grant through the Ohio Department of Education, provided mentorship for trans, queer, gay, lesbian high school youth. And many of the members and many people around us, and we also partnered with Temple Israel here in town. And it was remarkable to have the kids on stage with us and to see the high energy that was going on. And it was all a tribute to the heroes that are in our life, the heroes that we grow up with, how by our own leadership as choral members, we become leaders. And then the kids kind of look to us. It was remarkable. So when we talk about amazing organizations like the Harmony Project, which is a fantastic group, I think it's really important to remember that we've been doing all of this kind of work as well now for 27 years since Doug and our founders have put us together.
And even just you talked about our brand. Our brand is as much inclusiveness and diversity as possible. Because of the size of Columbus and the size of our community back in 1990, we created some aspect of our bylaws that would be inclusive that we've just never found a need to change. So in fact, you're going to find in the Columbus Gay Men's Chorus straight identified heterosexual women. You're going to find straight-identified men, and we don't make an issue of that. As long as you're willing to sing with the chorus, and frankly, we'll say, and have a voice that's going to work with the men's chorus, we'd love to have you.
Yeah, we're actually a non-auditioned chorus, meaning that if you come in and you sing for Dr. Sarsony, and we're really sorry that he couldn't be here with us today, but the group is actually singing today at the Veterans Administration. So we take the show on the road very often as well. And the guys are out there. So sing really great, guys. I know you're going to do amazing. Shout out to all the members. But yeah, he'll do a vocal placement for where you need to be. But we've had just about everybody under the rainbow or whatever particular spectrum you find yourself on have sang with us at one point or another.
It is competitive, though, in San Francisco, right, Tim Selig?
It is. It is. There's a mixture across the gala choruses of non-auditioned, auditioned, and there are even a few choruses that have a cap on membership and keep it fairly small. An aside, and I know I keep going back like squirrel.
No.
Squirrel. It would have been so much fun. Tim is one of my dearest friends. It would have been so much fun to have Doug, and Tim. Oh my gosh.
It's so much fun as a host.
So confusing. We take about half of the people who audition, and we have indeed our board has requested politely that we cap our membership at 300, which is way too many. And so we're not able to take everybody who auditions. It's not that rigorous, I will tell you. And it's an interesting process. I did want to say that one of the things that makes us unique is as gala choruses is that we have two children, and we have one child that's called mission and one child that's called music or artistry. Mm. And we have to feed those two children every single day. Every morning, seriously, I get up and I think, okay, I would love to just feed one, but I have to feed the other one as well. And the other, I have two children and we don't have favorites. Sorry, something caught my throat. But each of them requires nurturing on a constant basis. And when I think, obviously, choruses that don't have a mission, a particular mission, they have an only child. And all they have to do is feed that one child of artistry and musicianship. And it's a challenge. It's an incredible challenge to keep those in balance, but it also makes us who we are.
Commissioning new music is a growing part of the mission of gay and lesbian choruses in the United States. Is that happening in Columbus?
Yes. Yeah. We're really, really fortunate. Through the Columbus Foundation, I believe it's every other year, we actually get grants through either the Foundation or the Greater Columbus Arts Council to commission new works for men's music. And for me, that's one of the things that I think is so important about the gala choral movement, and especially within the gala choral men's movement, because there's so much music that is coming out exclusively for men's voices. And that's as rich tradition as music for anything. In fact, we're very excited. We have the Jacksons concert coming up. It's going to be very high energy, super dance heavy. I think that's what Dr. Selig is getting to us. But
yes.
Next year, we're taking the show on the road as well, and we're singing a super piece. I know that he got to see it. Two Boys Kissing with the Philadelphia Gay Men's Chorus. We're partnering with them. We're going to Philadelphia to sing. They're coming here to sing with us. And that was a commissioned piece off of the amazing book by Dan Levithan. So, and we're working all kinds of, listen for more information about that, but that's going to be a really exciting time for us next year.
Tim Selig, what about in San Francisco? I mean, how much of a part of your movement includes commissioning music for it?
The Dougs are probably shaking their head, thinking, okay, once Tim starts on this, we're going to have to extend the show for about 3 hours. The San Francisco Gay Men's Chorus really began the commissioning, but long before I was here. It didn't have anything to do with me, with Robert Seeley and the first big work for Gay Men's Chorus was called Naked Man, and it still survives today. It's, it's in 1996, and it's still one of people's favorites. And the San Francisco Gay Men's Chorus has commissioned an extraordinary amount of music over its history. It's one of the things that we feel is one of our major responsibilities to our brother and sister choruses, is to keep that going. I will say, I must hear shout out to Tim Starsny, my doppelganger in Columbus. This last weekend, I conducted a consortium of about 13 gala choruses at Lincoln Center. The commission was on the story of Tyler Clementi, the young Rutgers student who leapt to his death after having been cyberbullied by his roommate. It's called Tyler's Suite, and it's nine composers from Stephen Schwartz to John Corleano. It's just a wide array of composers. However, the entire thing was arranged by Dr. Tim Starsny from Columbus. How about that?
He's a fantastic arranger. We are so fortunate for his conducting skills and his arranging skills.
You are.
We know.
You are.
Well, and our associate conductor, Michael Medvedek, is a remarkable arranger as well. So I'll give a huge shout out to Michael for that.
Can I mention, in Columbus also, the chorus has two smaller ensembles. One is called Vox, and it is an audition ensemble, only 14 members, and you have to... audition for that. There's also a sacred ensemble that at least once a month is playing at a church in Central Ohio during the season between September and June. If you come to the concert next weekend, you're going to have an interesting opportunity to hear. I'm nervous. I can't remember the song, and I apologize, Michael Medvedek, for not being able to remember this. One of the Jackson songs has been written in 14-part harmony. It's a cappella, and each voice is singing a different instrument. That's the kind, and it's been commissioned, or it's been written by our assistant artistic director. And before the end of the show, I hope I remember the name.
Show's over. It's too late.
Hey, she didn't get the young ones on this interview, so, you know.
But I'm also very understanding. Tim Seelig, thank you so much for joining us today. Really, really enjoy
it. You're so welcome. And hey, Doug, great to visit with you.
Yeah, nice to visit with you.
Thank you so much.
Doug Motes, board president of the Columbus Gay Men's Chorus, thanks to you as well.
You're very welcome. Thank you for having us.
Doug Althauser, founding member of the Columbus Gay Men's Chorus, thanks to you.
It's called I Just Can't Stop Loving You, and that's what you'll hear next weekend.
Yeah,
14-part harmony.
That's
yay,
right, June 23rd, 24th, and 25th at the Lincoln. Tickets are $30, $25 from a member, and $20 if you are a student or a senior. So super dance-heavy, celebrating the King of Pop. We sure hope you can make it.
We'll have a link to that on our website at wosu.org/allsides if you have more if you want more information. Tim Seelig, artistic director of the San Francisco Gay Men's Chorus, the first one in the country. We're going to take a quick break and be right back, but here first is a cut from Lady Gaga's Born This Way, performed by the Columbus Gay Men's Chorus in 2012 for the Columbus Bicentennial Celebration. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. June is Pride Month. That's a celebration marking the 1969 Stonewall Uprising in New York City when activists protested a police raid at a gay club. This year marks the 36th Pride Parade and celebration in Columbus. It's bigger than ever. Joining us is Executive Director of Stonewall Columbus, Carla Rothen. Welcome back, Carla.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's your 20th this year.
Yes, my 20th Pride as an organizer. I started as a volunteer at Stonewall Columbus and just did the parade and then became the chair of it. But then in 2006, I became the executive director. So it's my 20th year.
The location is new this year, again. Mm-hmm. New, it's an old location, new again. How does it affect the tone of the event? You're downtown at... the bicentennial Genoa Parks scene?
Yes. Well, you know, really, a lot of people have been asking those questions, and I think we've posted some information about it, about why we moved. And so, you know, we've got about 500,000 people for the entire weekend. And when that parade comes in, it's very dense. And so the weekend became available again. And we used to be downtown for many, many years until they renovated and restored Bicentennial Park. So when the weekend became available, we looked at it and said, you know what? We're not going to be getting any smaller as a pride. We're probably just going to be growing. So we need to have some sustainability and be able to be moved to a festival area that I think can hold us over the long haul. So we decided to go ahead and make that move. And, you know, it's already set up for a festival down there. You know, it's got the electric is run and the stages are already built. We don't have to build a stage, even though we have another drag stage that we are going to build, a small one. But overall, it's conducive for a festival. So we decided to make that move. And I think it's going to be a good and successful venue change.
A year ago, Pride Week was sadly punctuated by the mass shootings at the Pulse nightclub in Orlando. How did that affect, in retrospect, when you look back on that time, what does it do to you going forward?
It was a hard week, wasn't it? I remember coming in here and talking about safety for Pride and, you know, my phone blowing up
at
3 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
It did. It changed everything for the week. I think we were one of the first Prides that happened in the country after that.
Right.
This is Pride Month for Ohio, too. You know, so not every weekend. Not everyone's on the same weekend as us, of course. But yeah, so I think we were one of the first ones. So we were scrambling to make sure we came up with a safety plan that we felt comfortable with. And we did a really fine job at that, I think, along with our Columbus Police Department, who I can't say enough great things about. So, but, you know, so security for Pride, there is no imminent threat this year. We are just looking at this as any big festival in Columbus. Red, White, and Boom and OSU football are kind of similar with regards to the safety plan that we are putting forth. I think we have enough security, and I think we don't have too much. So I think it should be good.
Is it something that attracts protests?
Yeah, of course. Whenever you get a large group of people together to voice their concerns or talk about, you know, politics, and of course you're going to have people that protest. They've dwindled over the years, especially here in Columbus, Ohio. I'm not saying the same for the rest of the country, but we have fewer and fewer each year of as far as protesters that are protesting LGBTQ rights. You know, now we have other issues that they might be protesting about our city or about the government in general. You know, so you know you're marching, so that's what it's all about. It's about exercising your First Amendment rights. So we're very prepared for that.
My guest is Carla Rothan. She is Executive Director of Stonewall Columbus. We're talking about Pride Week this week, the festival, the Pride Festival coming up Friday, Saturday, and Sunday?
No, just Friday and Saturday, the festival. Right. Saturday is the march at 10:30 a.m. We'll line up at the corner of Goodale and High, and we will probably be in two lines all the way to Fifth Avenue with about 235 parade entries. We will march south on High and turn right on Broad. And then we will have a big festival both days there, Friday and Saturday, with three stages and entertainment all day long. So we want everybody to come out and join us and enjoy the day.
Does it attract people from all over the place? 500,000,
yes,
it must.
It does, and every hotel is filled. Even in January and February, they were filled. We weren't sure the Lincoln Levesque was going to be open, so I think that they probably had a suite available or two. But they did open, and that is so exciting for us. They lit everything in rainbows, as did City Hall this
That's
week.
Right.
I don't know if you saw that on Monday. We did, a memorial to our victims of Orlando, but we also lit City Hall and gave the Illuminator Award to Gloria McCulley and Linda Schuler. So that was a really great day.
We were talking about gay men's choruses, the gala musical movement across the country and the world. And some people said, in the United States, is there really any reason for this anymore after, you know, same gender marriage was approved or made the law of the land by the Supreme Court, that kind of thing? What's left? Is there really a political imperative here anymore?
Well, you know, our political leadership in Columbus, Mayor Ginther, of course, in our city council. We've got a lot of our rights secured here and are up to date. And, you know, we can't be fired in the city of Columbus based on sexual orientation or gender identity. But you still can be fired in the state of Ohio. So we're not done yet with regards to our LGBT rights. So the Equality Act, which was just sponsored by Senator Brown, it's on the federal level, of course, to secure the fact that we can have a job and we lose our job because we're gay and we're secure housing. We can get an apartment or live anywhere we want. So we're still fighting that fight. So, but I think that we will always have a pride because it's not so much, even if everything were perfect, we still have a culture and we have a history to remember and we contribute to this world. And I think that it's important for us to preserve that culture for generations to come.
When did Pride March change from people walking down the street with brown bags over their heads to, you know, to protect their identity, to one that attracts thousands, not to mention all the onlookers of every stripe?
Sure. Like what year? I think it's hard to say like which year. It kind of was a gradual
just
thing.
Every year, more and more people revealed.
Yes. Every year, you know, the bags on their heads and fear of losing their jobs. We weren't even an organization yet. Then Stonewall Columbus became an organization after that initial march in 1981. But I think over the years, what happened to Columbus is that we became a more open and affirming city with regards to our city government, of course. And the leadership there, but also many of our businesses, both small and large, wanted to be part of the parade. And you're going to see a lot of churches there, a lot of civic organizations that want to make sure that everybody knows that they are open and affirming. So I think that over the years, it just started to evolve. And this year, we instituted a non-discrimination policy for the parade, which is everybody was saying, oh, my gosh, Carla, are you sure you want to do that? You're going to have less participants in the parade. I said, well, let's just see. And
what do you mean? I mean, non-discrimination policy.
So if you have a business like you have to show us that you have a non-discrimination policy that includes sexual orientation and gender identity. So, for instance, if you don't, then we're going to give you a year. It's a soft opening, but we're going to give you a year to develop one. And so there were some concerns that we might have less participants in Pride, but we actually have more, if you can believe that. And all of them have non-discrimination policies. The Methodist churches was one issue. They're having a big fight there and within their church, mm-hmm. And they will be marching under Reconciling Ministries. So I think we've worked that out with our churches. I think that it was a good thing to institute this year.
What's the best part of Pride Week for you?
You know, the best part of it is seeing somebody who is young, or this year we're honoring a group of people, which is our refugees, our LGBTQ refugees, for them to see how many people are just like them. And it's someone's first Pride. If they've come from another country because they were afraid that they were going to lose their lives and their families were even ordered to kill them, and they've come here to save themselves and to be able to carry on. Or if you're a young person or even an older adult that's just coming out for the first time, it's somebody's first Pride. And when they see those banners, it makes them cry, those banners that say Pride. And when they see all of those people there to support them and to say that, you know what, you're awesome, you know, and I think that's the most important thing.
Stonewall Columbus is getting a new building.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
This is the launch of our capital campaign. So we did this a couple of years ago. We've been in the quiet phase. We're doing a big gala tonight with Megan Mullally from Will and Grace. She's going to be here with Nancy and Beth, which is a show that she does with another woman, Stephanie Hunt. So that's going to be exciting. And we have a big show with Brian Justin Crum and Karen Williams and Well Strung. So it's going to be an evening gala. To raise money for the buildings. And so we had a $3.5 million campaign. We're at about $3.2 million in pledged gifts. And so the public phase, I believe, will take us right over the top. And so we are going to be breaking ground on the first and only LGBTQ community center in Central Ohio.
And where's that going to be?
It's on the corner of 4th and High. It's our current location.
All
we purchased those buildings in 2004. There's a big warehouse behind us. So we're going to merge those two buildings. And what we had was maybe 5,000 square feet of usable space. Now we have 16,000 square foot of a usable space for the community, and it'll be accessible. We didn't have an elevator. And so there were so many people that are older adults and veterans that were serving, and they couldn't get upstairs. So our biggest space was about 75. We could hold 75 people, and we outgrew that, you know, long ago. So I think this is just going to be a gem for the city and a jewel for the nation. So
correct me if I'm wrong. So it's going to be accessible, but it'll also be more like a rec center, an activity center. What are you going to do? What difference will it make?
Sure. We currently, just so you know, Pride is just one thing that we do.
Right.
And so all year long, we have programs and services. You know, we're here with working with families and individuals. We have classes and workshops and forums. We do legal workshops. We have skilled counselors at the center that are free for the uninsured individual. And so we actually have a robust program docket. So we were doing all kinds of different programs. And if the community needs something, we will fill that need. So we have grief support. We have ballroom dance. We have painting and drawing and writing classes. We do a little bit of theater in there. And we are part of the arts community. We're right there in the heart of the Short North. So we'll have art exhibits. And so all of those things, older adults, young people, families, they come together at that center, and they're with the people that are just like them. And I think it helps them to heal, and it helps them to grow, and it uplifts their spirits.
You know, Columbus, the gay population in Columbus takes up a larger percentage than the one in Chicago. And sometimes that's kind of hard to believe. According to the most recent Gallup poll, estimated LGBTQ population in Columbus, 4.3%. In Chicago, it's 3.8%. Mm-hmm. What is it about Columbus?
You know, people ask me that, and I'm not really sure. Maybe it's because we have a world-class university that attracts and retains some folks here. We have lots of businesses in different industries that want to keep folks here in Columbus. Maybe it's our Pride celebration. Maybe they just want to come to that every year. I don't know. But I think our Pride is larger than Chicago now, too.
Yeah.
We can claim that we're the largest Pride in the Midwest, because I think they're limiting their participation in Chicago based on safety issues with this. I think that is true. Don't quote me on that. But I think we'll see what happens this year. But I think we might be the largest Pride also. So I think it's just because, you know, we're a very friendly, polite city, and we love everybody, and we want everybody to come and enjoy themselves and live happy, healthy lives in a great American city.
What kind of events are going to be downtown this weekend?
Sure. Yeah. Friday, the festival will open at 4:00. So come down. Happy hour. Here we go. We've got Divinity Rocks, who
it's a big party.
It is a big party, and lots of great entertainment. You know, Crystal Waters is going to be there, and you know, this is all kind of free. Now people donate, and we got sponsors, and the city of Columbus, actually Rec and Parks, and the city have supported us with financial dollars over the years. With dollars over the years, and then but you know, it's also a platform for other groups to be able to talk about what they do for this city. So we've got a lot of people that have booths, and so it's kind of set up like the Arts Festival across the river.
Right.
So you'll see that. And so we'll have a big stage that's a community stage right by the river.
The main stage?
The main stage is a bicentennial, right where they've got it built. But then we'll have another stage that's by COSI.
Okay.
And there's like a big pavilion there where all the stuff that Stonewall does is going to be there with Experience Columbus. And then we'll have a drag stage, which is going to be programmed by some community members. And so we want to honor our drag artists and let them have a forum to express
themselves.
Another
big thing in Columbus.
Yes, it's big. It's big. And so it's going to be a lot of fun. And so I think that people will come and enjoy it. And after that parade comes in, it's going to be packed.
Packed. Carla Rothen, thanks so much for joining us again.
Thank you.
Every year it's a lot of fun to talk about Pride.
Thank you so much for having us. Really support you. Thank you for supporting us.
Carla Rothen, Executive Director of Stonewall Columbus. Very, very busy week for her. It is Pride Week. For more information about what's going on this week, check out the link on our website at WOSU.org/AllSides. Thanks to the All Sides staff, producer Michael DeBonis, assistant producer Shia Lanat, our All Sides interns, Kelly Rudolph, Kyle McKinnon, Aaron Kinkley and Owen Doherty, with video production by Rich Blue and Amber Blue. Alan DiCenzo is the composer of our theme music. WOSU News and Public Affairs Director Mike Thompson. Radio Operations Director Kevin Petrilla. Senior Broadcast Technician Eric French. Be sure to like All Sides on Facebook. Follow the show on Twitter at WOSU All Sides. You can follow me too at Ann Fisher WOSU. Thank you so much for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.